Bob Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation cussing and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head On with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bicod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy! Minute past the hour, and we begin this Tuesday edition of The Horn. I am Bob Kincaid. Sometimes I forget to remind myself of that. I trust you already know. It's a rainy, drizzly day here in the hills and hollers of West Virginia. Agnes and I are getting ready to move out of our bedroom.
God, oh my life.
No, it's raining real good, both outside and inside the house. I can't tell you how inspiring that is.
We've just gone green.
Oh, we've gone so green, we're going to be growing grass in the bedroom.
Tropical plants, Bob, tropical plants.
Yeah. Taffeta, darling. No, it's real fun to be sitting there working away, because I like to work in there. It's quiet during the day, and I can sit there and scream at Joe Scarborough and various and sundry other for-profit media idiots.
With Agnes missing from that.
Right, yeah, that she just refuses to participate. Oh, if you're going to scream, I'm leaving, Bob. And sitting there, clack, clack, clackety-clacking away at the laptop keyboard, and right on the laptop keyboard, splat! What the... And there it was. And there was the next one. And the next one's friend.
And then he hollers for Agnes.
Honey! Yeah, that's what it sounds like.
And yes, I come running.
But we'll get through. We'll find some way. We've moved our heads to the other end of the bed so that when the... So that when the sodden sheetrock collapses, it won't land on our poor little noggins. Liberal talk radio show host and lovely wife killed by falling sodden. No, we're trying to avoid that.
No, it fell on you last time.
Yes, it did.
I was out of.
But this one's aimed at your side of the bed, dear.
And you wanted to trade with me. You're so sweet.
I am. I am. No, I'm not sweet. By God, I am gallant.
Oh, yeah. You're my white knight, right?
Really, really white. Like pale pink, even.
Where's your horse?
Well, I'm big enough for the horse and me both.
You're a bad, bad monkey. You need to leave that alone. That's just terrible.
I'm not touching anything! I haven't heard that since I was 13!
Oh, that's twisted.
Oh, but anyway, it's the Tuesday edition of The Horn.
It's a very special Tuesday edition of The Horn.
Yes, it is. It's a birthday Tuesday edition of The Horn.
A very, very big birthday shout-out to Susan.
News Ninja Susan. It's her birthday today.
My sis.
Happy birthday.
We love you.
As do we all. And we certainly appreciate the literally years of news ninjitude. Is that a word? Ninjitude?
It is now.
Yeah, that's what you've got when you're a ninja with attitude. It's ninjitude.
It's ninjitude. So we love you. Thank you.
And happy birthday.
And big, big happy birthday. Now I'll get out of your hair, Bob.
Say goodbye, Agnes.
Goodbye, Agnes.
See how it works?
I love you all.
Yeah. David in Tennessee, don't screw with my head like that. Yes, it is Tuesday! David's taking a field trip tonight. David gets to go and have some awesome hand-battered chicken strips, some Yazoo IPA, and then the Bill Hicks documentary at the Belcourt Theater in Nash Vegas. P.S. What comes after galant? Galoshes? Yes, as a matter of fact, yes! Actually, the galoshes come first at this point in time, David. Well, you will owe us all a review of said Bill Hicks film upon return, Quiz on Friday. Right? Right. Enjoy the trip, David. I have a feeling it's going to be a real blast. And from what I understand, the Belcourt Theater in Nash, Vegas is something special. Foreign films and everything. You know, here in the hills of West Virginia, foreign films... Well, every film's a foreign film. Yeah. Hollywood? You mean Hollywood, Florida? No. Anyway. Let's see. A little bit of housekeeping to take care of. Night after tomorrow, Thursday the... What would that be? Yes, Thursday, Cinco de Mayo. I will not be behind the mic. It is a little-known fact that... No, I'm not even going to do that. No, there's no little bit of Mexican in me. I wish there was. But Thursday we will be going across the river. There's not going to be a show as such. Instead, if you want to enjoy some real silliness, tune into the Horns Ustream channel at about 7 p.m. Eastern Daylight Time. That's 7 p.m. Eastern Daylight Time. That is 6 p.m. Central Daylight Time, 5 p.m. Mountain Daylight Time, and 4 p.m. Pacific Daylight Time, and God knows what time it is in certain parts of Indiana and Arizona. But anyway, long about therein, this is a little bit of a story. Last year, on a whim, Ferg, otherwise known as the human constant metabolism, he was 14 at the time, he's 15 now, so shows no sign of letting up. On a whim, he signed up for our good friend Oscar Aguilar's burrito-eating contest. And it's not like the Nathan's thing where you try to eat as many burritos like they try to eat it. No. No. Oscar goes to a great deal of trouble to make these monumental burritos. The damn things have weights similar to certain radioactive isotopes. I mean, heavy. And this is the third annual Cinco de Mayo burrito eating contest at DOG's Mexican restaurant in Fayetteville, West Virginia. And Ferg has sworn that he will take the title this year. Last year he had a little bit of a tough time of it. I realize this is the dinner hour, so everybody look away or whatever. He really didn't know how to approach the issue and just began chowing down on this giant burrito, but along the way started washing it down with water. I'm not going to get graphic. We're just going to say it didn't work out well for him, and he wound up in third place. A couple of other people had already parted, so he wound up in third place, but he has laser beam focus on first place this year. So what we're going to do, because my good friend Oscar provides his dining customers with Wi-Fi, what we're going to do is we're going to Ustream the third annual DOG's burrito eating contest. That's right, David. Ferg's metabolism takes scientific notation to get the number down on paper. And still, the numbers tend to run off one edge. Depends on whether you're writing right to left or left to right. I mean, I've taken to now. Last night, our good buddy Jethro phoned in, but so this is not that. But I've taken to referring to him as Jethro. I'm an old Beverly Hillbillies fan. And if you too are one, you might remember the scenes of Jethro sitting with a freaking butter churn full of cornflakes It is not an exaggeration. You might also remember Jed saying, you know, the boy was born with a full set of teeth, just like a beaver. It ain't far from the truth. Oh, good. I got David. Every film is a furin film. Spit take. It's so nice when I can return the favor. I can't tell you the number of times that I've been... Well, David and others just whack me in mid-sentence. It happened the other night, as a matter of fact. Part of the joy of doing this program. So anyway, we're going to webcast by trying to leverage a little bit of the funky new technology that's available in the world. We're going to webstream on our Ustream channel. Just go to ustream.tv and look for Head On with Bob Kincaid. It'll be there, we hope, about 7 o'clock Eastern Time. Do the math for the rest of the world. It'll be about midnight, Greenwich Mean Time, wouldn't it? I think. But tune in and watch the... And the whole fam-damily will be there with us. And there will be several other competitors. Tune in and watch the fun and frivolity for a little bit. We have to check out this technology periodically so that I don't do stupid things like I did in Washington, D.C., such as broadcasting a rally sideways. Yeah, you thought I was being artsy, didn't you? No, I wasn't. That was me screwing up. I kept getting these text messages from Agnes. Honey, the screen is sideways. Don't! Well, this time we plan not to be sideways and just... Because there's so many uses for this technology. And this is going to be fun. Marty, of course, assumes the absolute worst about me. Cinco de Mayo, you'll be drunk? Not immediately! Yet? Sorta? Kinda? No. A little? A bit! No, I did... They do. They make the best margaritas in West Virginia there. They really do. But no, I will be... I'm in my cinematographer mode. I have to be so bare. But about 7 o'clock, we'll have a run at it. I don't know. I haven't told Ferg yet that, and the contestants don't know yet that they're going to be on worldwide television. That's what makes it all sneaky and stuff. So, tune in if you dare. That's Thursday evening. Tomorrow will be a regular show. Friday should be a regular show. But I wanted to get that programming note out of the way. A little bit more housekeeping before we go much further. I had a note when I opened my email this morning about something from the show last night. It was a note asking me to censor some words from the program. And whether you realize it or not, I actually spend real time paying attention to what you offer in the way of constructive criticism about this this program. And I answered the email as best I could. But this individual noted a call that came in last night in which a caller became transported by a certain amount of what I think we should rightly describe as passion. And let fly a couple of, several unsavory epithets regarding gender. Words that I prefer not to use. But it sort of called to mind the necessity that I need to, and you know, we add new listeners all the time. That's why this is one of the 50 most important online radio shows in the United States, 2 years running.
And we are not on terrestrial, we are not on the terrestrial airwaves. We are not on the censored FCC airwaves where, while you can't say booger or shit, well, you can say booger. But you can't say the brown word on terrestrial radio. You can, however, say all manner of scurrilous filth about people that you hate. Witness any given program by Glenn Beck, Rush Limbaugh, Michael Savage, on and on and on. Brian Fisher is online, not on terrestrial radio, but he is utterly disgusting. Sean Hannity is on terrestrial radio. And while they don't technically violate the rules of the piety of the public airwaves, their programs are long strings of utter filth. Done under a broadcasting license granted in your name. Well, we're not constrained by that here. And I don't have here what broadcast stations have, to wit, a 7 or a 10 or a 20 or a 40 second delay. Those things are very, very expensive, and we passed ours along a long time ago. Because we sort of decided that trying to work terrestrial radio was going to be a non-starter. Because what we do here doesn't work within the scope of terrestrial radio. So I'm not going to censor anybody in mid-speech. I might suggest beforehand, if I sense that things are going to get out of hand, that we not go there. But I won't do it in mid-speech and break the stride of someone who is trying desperately to make a point and is making statements in good faith. Now, there's a big difference between good faith and bad faith. Bad faith never gets on this program because I don't allow right-wingers on this program, and right-wingers are the living manifestation of bad faith. I could cite examples tonight, as a matter of fact, but I think I will refrain. But just a reminder that it is as much the intent of words as the words themselves that matters. It is context, truly, that matters. I have an almost perfect ear for when someone is sincere versus when someone is being gratuitous. And I can say with near 100% certainty that if you hear an objectionable word on this program, the objectionable word is being used not gratuitously. What you heard last night was a manifestation of the actual form and speech of an entire subset culture within the United States of America. So, just a note. You know, meanwhile, I've got I'm getting complaints because I don't swear allegiance to the Queen of England, and a complaint because I don't buy into the fraud and foolhardiness of organized religion, any of them. But I'm not going to change me or censor you or me to suit some overarching no. I despise censorship. I won't have it. But by the same token, those of us who are free enough to speak our minds must also recognize that that freedom carries a certain responsibility. Not to do things gratuitously. To speak always in good faith. And I think I can say for certain that what happens here is 3 hours a night of some of the most profound good faith you are ever going to hear offered coming through a speaker or in other places as well. So just kind of bear that in mind. Sometimes there are words that I would not permit. I'll engage in censorship in my family because we're raising children here. There are words that I will not allow my children to use and will upbraid them severely for using. But we are all adults here, aren't we? I think so. And with that in mind, just bear in mind that what happens here for 3 hours a night is a little microcosmic experiment in real freedom of speech. Not gratuitous, always in good faith, but very real freedom of speech. Marty, really? Best margarita? Facetiously, I ask if you can UPS a few overnight. See, I can't even read that. Facetiously? Never send me another email, anybody, with the word facetiously in it, please. Facetiously, I ask if you can UPS a few overnight to me. I think I just ruined all the humor contained in that one-liner. Ron and Raleigh, hey, Bob. Remember? I had to mute the mic when this one just rolled in. I am an old Beverly Hillbillies fan. Remember, Jed also called Jethro the stomach that walked like a man. Oh, I think that one's going into the repertoire. Ron and Raleigh says, I use that one to this day for those that have a commodious appetite. Well, we haven't quite gotten to the point where the boy eats out of the commode, but... You can't hang that one up above the rim without me... No, alley-oop, baby. Commodious appetite. The stomach that walked like a boy. Born with a full set of teeth. Just like a beaver. So that gets the program up and running, at least, I hope. And I thought it might be instructive... Not instructive. I thought it might be appropriate in light of the national obsession with... the really, really big story about the killing of Osama bin Laden, which has caused the right wing and certain portions of our side to come completely unglued. Witness Glenn Greenwald. No, really, Glenn Greenwald equated taking out bin Laden with killing a baby. Not kidding. He really did. I couldn't get there in a million years. But he got there in a matter of seconds. But I thought it might be handy to get away from some of this a little bit before everything shakes completely loose. Now, there are bin Laden stories out there that probably merit some mention, or actually stories ancillary to the bin Laden thing that merit some mention, much of it having to do with the right wing losing its tiny mind. And they've lost it completely. For instance, kind of sleazy Rice showed up being interviewed somewhere in the for-profit media today. And she said, of course we wanted to catch bin Laden. That's why we built an entire center dedicated to tracking him and finding him. I heard that and thought, Because the center that they built to track and catch bin Laden? Yeah, they closed that in 2006. Somewhere long about after George Bush said, really, I don't give a damn where he is. They closed the go find the, they closed the Where's Waldo Center, the Bush administration. But they knew he'd be caught someday. I think implicit in kind of sleazy Rice's remarks was the fact that she knew he'd be caught someday, but wouldn't be caught by the guy that she mistakenly, Freudianly referred to one day as my husband, or my Mr. the President. My husband. I hope things like that are remembered in the future. I hope that's that. She must be a very, very, very wealthy woman, Condoleezza Rice. Why do I say that? Because every time she appears in public, she's very well put together. Her makeup is flawless. And she must, by definition, be wealthy enough to have her own personal body assistant to put her makeup on in the morning. Otherwise, she'd just walk downstairs all a smeared up mess from all the blood that's perpetually on her hands. Jesus, she'd look like something from Blue Velvet. Now, I always knew we'd catch him. Just kind of knew it wouldn't be my husband. I mean, the President, George Bush. No. But that's the sane part of it. Those are the sane, that's the semi-sane remarks. There's all kinds of crazy out there. NFL fans, did you see this one? This is kind of precious. Boss Man Wayne is going to hate this. Pittsburgh Steelers, and you have to say it that way, Steelers, not Steelers. And I'm a Steelers fan, too. Steelers have a running back named Rashard Mendenhall. Pretty good, too. He can get moving with the old pigskin. Yesterday, proving that athletes really probably should not, well, you know, This is in a long line of why don't you shut up. The same long line that includes, you know, Brett Favre taking pictures of Mr. Happy and texting them to a woman, not his wife. Yeah. A long line. Rashard Mendenhall tweeted on Monday, "What kind of person celebrates death? It's amazing how people can hate a man they've never even heard speak. We've only heard one side." Well, okay. I can understand that. But then, flush with that success at making the Twitter work, he went on to say, "We'll never really know what happened about September 11th. I just have a hard time believing a plane could take a skyscraper down demolition style." Then again, on his Twitter profile, he describes himself as a conversationalist and professional athlete. Very interesting. Let's see. Here's what he tweeted about bin Laden. "I believe in God, I believe we're all his children, and I believe he is the one and only judge." Okay, fine. He's a religious loony. "Those who judge others will also be judged themselves." Well, that's out of the book, too. "For those of you who said you want to see bin Laden burn, I ask, how would God feel about your heart?" He stopped tweeting about 6 p.m. on Monday and has not tweeted since. That's apparently when the phone call from his agent came in going, "Jesus Christ, shut up! Don't you know we got some contract negotiating to do?" He He has 13,631 followers on Twitter. Those seem to be tweets in relative good faith. But in this culture, it will do you no good. Because this culture, in large part, does not operate in good faith. I've had a lot of emails over the past 24 hours talking about just what... See, we're doing it. See how it happens? You mean you start out not meaning to, not wanting to, and then sucked into it. Just a lot of email exchanges going back and forth and Facebook comments and things like that about what exactly all this means and what does it mean, how we, what is how the United States is you know. And the only thing I can come away with, and I think this is really the final analysis for me, I welcome anyone, especially on our side, but you know, there's even some GOP noise, probably right for the wrong reasons, about getting out of Afghanistan, but you know, I'll link up with anybody who wants to end George Bush's filthy little wars. I'm game for that. But I have real fears because, over, you know, I've tried to make it abundantly clear that I think we live in empire. And that empires behave in ways that are entirely different from how a rational republic behaves. And so I think, for instance... One of the things I pointed out in is an exchange today. Everything has, it's almost atomic, you know. Everything has a positive or a negative spin. One of the, and coming out of this latest incident, we might easily, I mean, our side says, hey, look, we got the guy we went there to get. Now let's get out and go home. It seems elegant and simple. Simply elegant, really. But another side, the other side says, no, no, no. What this proves is that the Pakistanis are a perfidious bunch of SOBs who have a lot of nuclear weapons, a very unstable government, and a military that it can't control, and an intelligence structure that would rat us out as quick as look at us. And so it was awfully handy to be able to zip across the Afghan frontier, do this job, and get back across before anybody was the wiser. And this proves that we've got to stay in Afghanistan, not get out. Tell me, you can't just hear that conversation taking place in the Pentagon. Because I can. And so, empires do not willingly go home unless they are driven home. We were driven out of Vietnam. We didn't leave willingly. I hope that, well, I would imagine that most of the Vietnam-era veterans would probably agree with me. It was as much events in Vietnam as it was any anti-war protests back here in the States that resulted in that decision. Remember, as early as 1968, Richard Nixon ran on a platform of having a... Remember, those of you of a certain age? Remember, he had a secret plan to end the war that he would only give us if we made him president? You might recall that Grumpy John McCain made the same argument in 2008, but this time, having been through the Vietnam experience, we weren't biting. That was 1968. He took office, Nixon did, on January the 20th, 1969, and it was another 6 years before we were done with Vietnam. Some of the six nastiest years of that entire long, horrifically misguided, mistaken American involvement. We did not go willingly. Nor do I think that we will leave Afghanistan willingly. And while some people say, well, look, you know, Barack Obama already started, he already ended combat operations in Iraq, we're still there, too. We're still there. And we will be there. And with the discovery of the vast mineral resources under the soil of Afghanistan, do you think corporate America is going to want to, especially the extractive industries, are going to want to walk away from that and just leave it to the Chinese? Yeah, me neither. I guess they've got, what, a lot of lithium under their soil there, don't they? Remember that report? Wasn't there lithium mentioned? Because at the time, I remember thinking about something that Van Jones said at PowerShift 2009 in D.C. when he said, if our move toward a clean, green economy is not accompanied by a profound commitment to social justice, that future wars would be fought over the lithium we needed to run the batteries of our electric tanks. And there is a real and frightening possibility of that being the case. I want us out of Afghanistan so badly I can taste it. And I know you do too. But it's going to take more than the usual anti-war protests to do it this time. It's going to take a much larger coalition. I also, as mentioned last night, have grave fears about the Pentagon budget ever getting back onto the table for consideration. Maybe the Pentagon budget will, but as our buddy Tosh pointed out earlier today, the Black Ops budget is safe for decades. Because that may be the way that we wage war now. Grievous though it be that we wage war at all. So just some things worth thinking about. And then there is the right-wing insanity. Dear God, there is right-wing insanity. Lots and lots of right-wing insanity. Last night, we ran a little bit of Bill Cunningham out of the WLW blowtorch in Cincinnati. We ran some Flush Flimball. Do you remember me mentioning, and I really do try to stay away from this stuff, but in this case, it's irresistible. Do you remember me mentioning an email that I got from John Fox? Because John is a member of Team Sarah. All about the Honor the Troops rally that Sarah was a-holding. Well, about 200 people showed up last night in Colorado to hear Godzilla from Wasilla. If you want to hear the very textbook definition of petty, I think this has to be it.
Yesterday was a testament to the military's dedication and relentlessly hunting down an enemy through many years of war. And we thank our president, we thank President Bush for having made the right call.
Yeah, thanks to Right Wing Watch for pulling that little clip. We thank our president. We thank President Bush. She's still living, apparently, somewhere in 2007. Amazing. Can't even mention the sitting president by name. Isn't that just mind-blowing? The latest thing, of course, is that, and remember, there is a 24, and I think this is the larger awareness. The story is not what gets said or not said. It's the larger awareness that there is a massive, you know, Hillary Clinton called it a number of years ago, a vast right-wing conspiracy. And I think it was the use of the word conspiracy that sort of damned that analysis. But she was correct. Because there is a vast right-wing messaging machine that goes constantly. The latest one being the succession of tired old warmongering hacks from the Bush administration trotting out to say, See, we tortured him, and that's where we got the information. We tortured him because we got the information. We got the information because we tortured him. Torture good. How you feel about that torture now? Ain't you glad we torturing America? There's only one problem. None of the information that led to Osama bin Laden was the result of torture.
What kind of light can you shed on how that process played out? There's been indications that that information was gained by the harsh interrogation program of the CIA. What do you know about that? Was it a product of waterboarding, that kind of process?
We are in the process of a big study on the detention and interrogation of the detainees on the Intelligence Committee. The Republicans have...
Now, this is Dianne Feinstein, certainly not one of my favorite senators.
...pulled out of the study, so this has been carried out by the Democratic staff, essentially. They have gone through more than 3 million emails, cables, pieces of paper looking for this. To date, the answer to your question is no. Nothing has been found to indicate that this came out of Guantanamo. And people were questioned, but there were no positive answers as to the identity of this number one courier. Who has it? Yeah, Carolyn. Hometown girl.
Since some of the intelligence came from the Bush-era interrogations, do you consider this an enemy of vindication of those interrogations from the secret prison?
No, absolutely not. I do not. I happen to know a good deal about how those interrogations were conducted. And in my view, nothing justifies the kind of procedures that were used.
Well, that certainly seems to be rather dispositive. But it certainly wasn't dispositive for... apparently, you know, Peter King rushed out to thank the President of the United States and used his name and everything. But then apparently he did get the memo. You'll see what I mean.
Continuing now with our special factor coverage, the death of Osama bin Laden. Joining us from Washington, New York, Congressman Peter King, head of the House Homeland Security Committee. So, Congressman, right off the bat, tell me something I don't know. Tell us something we don't know.
Well, I don't know if everyone knows this or not, but...
Wait. Bill O'Reilly wants us to tell him something that he doesn't know. Maybe we could tell him why the tides work. Because, you know, he says, I'm a Christian because I know the tides. That's why you atheists, you can't. The tides come in, the tides go out. You guys can't explain that. But apparently he wants to know something about Osama bin Laden from Peter King. Come on, where did the audio go? Hate it when that happens.
It came from an overseas prison where Khalid Sheikh Mohammed was being interrogated, and waterboarding was used, and it was during the interrogation of Khalid Sheikh Mohammed through waterboarding that this information was learned.
So KSM gave it up? Mohammed himself gave it up?
KSM gave us the first lead, and then later on, Al-Libi, who also was a top aide to bin Laden, he was also being interrogated with strong interrogation measures, and he confirmed information about the couriers. So key information we got on a very, very vital
part. That is absolutely fascinating. Absolutely fascinating. You're not going to hear that on the other networks again.
Guess why? Because, seeing as how it originated on Radio Rwanda, it's a damn lie. Even even former President Pinhead's people said that Khalid Sheikh Mohammed did not reveal the names while being waterboarded. Under standard interrogation, months later, he gave it up. Moreover, the CIA got the courier's name by putting more agents in the field in 2005 and intercepting phone calls and email messages between the courier's family and anyone inside Pakistan. And from there, they got the full name. Not from torture. Jesus criminy. They're a shameless lot, aren't they? Without a doubt, they are. What is their fascination? Is this some sort of psychosocial creepiness? Is there just a character flaw inside the Republican mind that some sort of sadistic gene that gets off on tormenting other human beings? Because if you're willing to lie about it in a situation as grave as this, merely to advance the idea that we should be torturing, then it seems that we would be ill-advised not to look at why it is they so desperately want it. And for the life of me, apart from a general diagnosis of psychosis or sociopathy, I can't get it. Because there is not one shred of evidence. Not even this stuff that they want to make up that doesn't really exist. There's not one shred of evidence to suggest that torture ever yields meaningful information. Go figure. If you've got an answer, I want to hear it. Because I'm stumped. Got an excellent email from our buddy Benedict at Large earlier today. Random thoughts on the demise of Osama while listening to Monday's podcast. If the death of Osama bin Laden enhances Obama's national security creds, fine, but why was there ever a question? And because there was a question at all, this will do nothing to resolve it. It is, after all, an event in the real world, and the question of Obama's national security creds does not reside there. On the left, at least one national radio talker has called Obama's actions extraordinary. Not to detract from the accomplishment, but why? Name one single president since FDR who would not have done the same. Okay, now name a second. Have we really become so jaded by the experience of the last president that now we think anything a president does that is slightly larger than his everyday job is extraordinary? Regarding JSOC, the Joint Special Operations Command, JSOC, regarding JSOC, if you build it, they will come. At one point in my life, I thought it was good to have a military that couldn't be defeated. I no longer think that. It leads to a temptation that at least our right wing cannot resist. Regarding the celebrating college kids, they were on average 10 years old when all this started. It is all they have ever known. And finally, says Benedict at Large, can we come home now? Because if we can't, then nothing happened in Pakistan last Sunday. Nothing at all. And I am jaded. And consequently, I will say, no, we can't come home. I want us, as I said earlier, to come home from those far-flung, god-awful mistakes we made so badly I can taste it. But if I took a... well, they won't accept a $5 bet. If I took a $20 bill and I ran it out to some sort of betting establishment in the state of Nevada, and offered it on us leaving Afghanistan, I think the bet would be taken. And I would be taken too, to the cleaners. I think there's a lot of strength in what Benedict says in terms of Obama's national security credentials exist in the real world, and the question about them does not reside there. We're dealing with people who cannot cope with nor exist in a reality-based world. From birthers to baggers to deathers to tenthers to fourteenthers to corpsers to booger eaters, they don't live in that world, those right-wingers. Because every last one of those subsets are motivated by a very, very base, subatomic level racism. Plain and simple. I think when Benedict at Large says, have we really become so jaded by the experience of the last president that now we think anything a president does that is slightly larger than his everyday job is extraordinary? I think we are there, Benedict. Because the fact of the matter is, as noted last night, we went from Maxwell Smart to James Bond. All those clips that we've seen in the last 48 hours of George Bush saying, I really don't care where he is. Hey, he's on the run. That's all that matters. That's the political speak equivalent of Maxwell Smart saying, missed him by that much. And consequently, those 8 years, for a lot of people, those 10-year-olds you mentioned there, Benedict, they didn't know Bill Clinton. They didn't know the Reagan years or the first Bush years. Lord knows they didn't know the simple competence of an FDR or a Truman or the hidebound Republicanism that would now not even be recognized as such by the Republican Party of an Ike. All they knew through their childhood years, and especially their adolescence, was
a semi-literate, pig-eyed, jug-handle-eared freak who ran our country into the dirt. So I think that, Benedict, I really think that that is the source of the extraordinary sense of, oh my God, we can do this? It took 8 years of Ronald Reagan, 4 years of Bush 1, and 8 years of Bush 2 to completely beat out of the American psyche the idea that we could do anything we want to. I was struck Sunday night by the fact that Barack Obama used this event to argue that the American nation can do anything we set our minds to do. By God, if we're going to kill you, we're going to get you and we're going to kill you. We went... Was it a dream? We went to the moon. We went to the moon several times. We stopped diseases. We rebuilt a planet after a planetary Marshall conflagration with a Marshall Plan. We did so many things. But those 17 and 18 and 19 and 20-year-olds you're talking about, Benedict, came into their consciousness in a nation that was convinced it could no longer do great things, and now the only great thing they have to hang their hat on is a military exercise in tracking down a criminal and summarily executing him. That's not to say he didn't need killing. I'm nonviolent. There's a lot of conflicting emotions inside me. But you know what? When it comes to the final analysis for me, Osama bin Laden was a fundamentalist who wanted to use horror to compel others to join his sick fundamentalist religious view of the world. Don't think for a minute that this country doesn't have a lot of little proto-Osamas in our midst, only their names are Bill and Mac and Tim, right? And Donald. Yeah. And Mick. And they spew an endless... And Newt. And they spew an endless tide of religious hatred that is not a damn bit different from the religious hatred that flowed like a sewer from Osama bin Laden. It's not the individual faith, it's the fundamentalism. And it is toxic and terminal. Ron in Raleigh says, AIL. Bob, I don't know why you bother. My rule with Repiglicans is AIL. That stands for assume it's a lie. There's not an honest person among them. Ray says, pass the jello. The answer is easy. Bush stole office obsessed with taking out Saddam. An agreement was reached. The details of said agreement are above this poor boy's pay grade. Of this, I do not doubt. I have no proof, but how the does one not connect the doubts? Politics not fascinating because of truth, but because of the denuding of truth is the fascination of politics. Our institutions are fucking us. Do you remember in May of 2001 when the Bush administration had already given the Taliban some 40 million, 14 million, 40 million, you do the numbers. We gave them millions of taxpayer dollars as a sort of reward for their having eradicated a significant amount of the opium trade. They were invited to Washington, D.C., the Taliban leadership, and at that time George Bush told them, hey, listen, we will give you a carpet of gold or a carpet of bombs. You choose. And that's before September even rolled around. It was an inside job. There are some who complain that Osama bin Laden wasn't captured and brought back for trial. I would have loved to have seen him tried. I'm one of those people. I actually want to still believe, understanding that believe is the most dangerous word in the English language, in a functioning U.S. justice system. I'd like to have seen him tried. And I'd like to have seen him have the best criminal defense lawyer in the United States so that no one could say he had been deprived of justice. I'd like to have seen that happen. But to compare taking him out with killing a baby is just a little bit beyond the pale. And to say, why didn't we taser him and take him into custody when they were within minutes of massive Pakistani military assets, it didn't work for me. It didn't work for me. Although I think it would have been cool to have had him on ice, alive, and facing true justice. But he wasn't going to come with us. He was going to die before being captured. So there's that. Remember that the Taliban offered him to us via a trial at The Hague. But George Bush didn't want justice. George Bush wanted flaming revenge. And for that reason, thousands, tens of thousands of Afghan civilians lie decomposing in 10-year-old graves who never raised a finger against us. Is that just a little unsettling? Ray adds that bin Laden was W's reflection in a feces-covered mirror. Jan says he had to die. He was a Bush creation. Actually, he was mostly a Reagan creation. Remember the thing that first set bin Laden off? When Pappy Bush started Bush War I? With all the attendant lies about how, oh, you remember, don't you? They're disconnecting little babies from the incubators in Kuwait and throwing them out the windows and raping them and eating them. Not a word of truth in it.
I would be sensitive to something like that if it were true. But applying Ron and Raleigh's the maxim, A-I-L, assume it's a lie. Well, yeah, it was. None of that happened. It was all made up to gin up the ever-so-soft-skulled, always-up-for-a-good-war American people into biting. And it was that time when we put a bunch of American ground troops on sacred Saudi sand that Osama bin Laden had a straight-up, purple polka-dotted, blue-screaming-hissy fit and demanded that we leave the sacred sand. Do you remember what the first thing was George Bush did militarily after September 11th? Yes, he withdrew American troops from sacred Saudi sand. He did what Osama bin Laden asked him to do. And we stopped having an Osama problem. There you go. But it still wasn't enough because George had to work out his weird Oedipal issues that probably stemmed all the way back to, you know, Mommy Bush with him, with little two-year-old Georgie on the potty. You're a dirty boy, George! You're a dirty boy! Clutching at her pearls. You'll never be the man your father is. You can't even beat him at croquet. Sure, that's a little imagining. But you know the real stories about the fights that they've had over croquet and badminton matches, and, you know, let's... Hey, come on, old man. I'll take you. Mano a mano. Dead drunk. And we went into Iraq on the pretext of George Bush's psychopathology, and the oil companies screamed, "Yay, us!" And there you have it. So let's take a break. When we come back, your phone calls, the lines are open. You know the number, 877-443-2366, 877, the numeral 4, head on your nickel, 304-658-3333. This is Conversation Radio. This is America's listener-supported liberal voice. The Green News Report with Brad Friedman and Desi Doyen is on the way. We will be back. I'm Bob Kincaid, and this is The Horn.
I'm Thinking ahead means preparing for the future of our children, our grandchildren, and our wild, wonderful West Virginia. Developing our renewable energy resources is the best way to ensure a clean, sustainable way of life and safe, good-paying jobs for generations to come. Here in the Mountain State, our most abundant energy resource is the wind. Our ridges and majestic mountain peaks shape and direct the wind like stones in a mountain stream. Coal River Mountain is the ideal place for developing wind power. The Coal River Mountain Wind Farm will provide us with a source of clean energy and good jobs forever. We have the power to make our future happen now. Be a part of the clean energy solution for West Virginia by visiting coalriverwind.org or call 304-854-2182. That's coalriverwind.org, 854-2182.
It's Tuesday, May 3rd, 2011.
Record-breaking storms last week lead to record-breaking flooding and exploding levees.
You can hear the rumble go all the way from one end to the other. Made your heart skip a beat.
Too little, too late? A new tsunami wall for Fukushima. Big oil spends millions to protect billions. Plus, the role of climate change in last week's record deadly storms.
All of that and more straight ahead. I'm Brad Friedman of BradBlog.com.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
Stand by for 6 minutes of independent green news, politics, analysis, and snarky comment.
So, Zanian, global warming is going to cause too much of this, according to Brad.
I think Al Gore already admitted his whole case was a fraud.
Oh, my God, what? Al Gore admitted his whole case was a fraud? I hadn't heard anything about this all these years,
Brad,
and now he admits...
Brad, that was Fox News.
Oh, that was Fox News?
Yes.
Oh, okay, never mind. I thought that was a real news network. My apologies. This is your Green News Report. Okay, Des, well, we leave it to you, as always, to come up with a green news angle to the news about Osama bin Laden this week.
Oh, you betcha. The oil industry is probably delighted about Osama bin Laden because it's diverted the corporate media's attention away from last week's record oil industry profits amidst near-record gasoline prices and that awkward focus on the $4 billion the industry receives in taxpayer subsidies and federal tax breaks every year.
Oh, yeah, that was the news, wasn't it?
Oh, it was.
Just before this happened.
Oh, yes. And a new report on lobbying and campaign donations by the oil industry shows that in the 2010 election cycle, Big Oil gave over $2 million in campaign contributions almost exclusively to Republican candidates, but that was nothing compared to the $63 million Big Oil spent on lobbying Congress in the last year alone.
Money well spent.
Oh yes, very good return on that investment. Although it's dropped out of the news cycle, the nuclear crisis at Japan's Fukushima Daiichi nuclear power plant is still ongoing. Still static, but not stable. And now, Japanese officials say they will build a new tsunami wall to protect the plant from future tsunamis, but the proposed new tsunami wall will still be shorter than the estimated height of the March 11th tsunami.
Shutting the door after the horse has left the barn and leaving the door cracked open a bit.
Uh-huh. The Army Corps of Engineers intentionally blew up a section of the Mississippi River levee system on Monday night after weeks of persistent severe rains swelled both the Mississippi and Ohio rivers to the highest levels ever recorded. Let's say that again. Both the Mississippi and the Ohio rivers are at the highest levels ever recorded. The intentional breach using explosives diverted a portion of the floodwaters into designated floodplains and is so far succeeding in reducing flood levels downstream and relieving pressure on levees along the river that were showing signs of failure and had already been breached in several places.
You could hear the rumble go all the way from one end to the other. Made your heart skip a beat. But, if it works and it's for the good, then, like I said, my people and the citizens will make do. We'll come ahead and we'll get through this.
The U.S. Supreme Court refused a last-ditch attempt by the state of Missouri to stop the detonation. The state argued it would flood and degrade 130,000 acres of valuable farmland. Finally, in this year of record-breaking weather, last week's outbreak of severe storms is now officially one for the record books. The storm system that cut that path of destruction across the South was so far the second highest one-day death toll from tornadoes in U.S. history and broke the highest number of tornadoes in a 24-hour period on record ever. And this April broke the record not just for the most tornadoes in any April, but also for the most tornadoes in any month in recorded U.S. history.
Des, last week we spoke about one meteorologist who said that the rash of storms in the south is due to excessive moisture in the air and the increased warmth in the Gulf waters. He posited that these storms were, in fact, related to global warming and climate change. Has that opinion become a consensus this week?
The influences, of course, are very complex in a global system. And the simple truth is that climate scientists for decades have predicted an increase in the frequency and magnitude of these storms due to humans dumping ever more heat-trapping gases into the atmosphere. Dr. Kevin Trenberth, head of the Climate Analysis Section at the U.S. National Center for Atmospheric Research, says, quote, "There is a systematic influence on all of these weather events, and it would be irresponsible not to mention global warming." In other words, they're saying that global warming doesn't necessarily cause the storm itself, but it does make the storm more intense.
And of course, these storms come on the heels of the GOP having voted to cut funding for weather monitoring at the National Weather Service and for cutting the budget from FEMA. Great timing, guys. For more on that and the stories we did not get to today, please check out our website at greennews.bradblog.com, where we would also much appreciate a donation to help sponsor the Green News Report so that we can stay on your public airwaves and keep telling you the truth that Fox News keeps lying about. By the way, you can follow us on the Twitters 24/7 at Green News Report. I hope you will. I'm Brad Friedman.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
And this has been your Green News Report.
Don't know why there's no sun up in the sky. Stormy weather since my man and I.
We know you want to save big on your phone bill, and we know how you can.
That's right. We do.
We're saving more than 50% on our home phone bill since we switched to CityNet's digital phone plan.
Really? Over 50%?
CityNet's digital phone plan is only $24.95 a month.
Only $24.95?
You get unlimited local and long-distance calling.
Just $24.95?
And with CityNet's digital phone plan, you keep your current number. All you need is a high-speed internet connection. Get details at CityNet.net.
$24.95.
And, oh, this is cool. With CityNet's digital plan, I can use my home phone anywhere in the world with high-speed internet. No extra cost.
There's 20, and there's 4, and there's 95.
Did I mention CityNet is a West Virginia-owned company?
Did I mention $24.95?
Save at least 50% on your residential phone. Get unlimited local and long distance, and keep your same number, all for just $24.95 a month. Visit CityNet.net today for more details. Some exclusions and restrictions may apply.
Total Genius. It's not your mother's soap.
Hey, dude, wait 1 second. It's totally my mother's soap.
Bubble Genius. It's not your father's soap.
No. See, right here, I've got soap for my dad.
And you know what? It's not just soap. Look, it's stuff for my dog.
Holy crap. There's even stuff for all my pregnant friends.
And hippies.
And hey, dude, loosen that tie. Try it again.
Bubble Genius. We got your soap right here.
And don't worry about that body stuff.
www.bubblegenius.com. See the man with the military mind, trying to make us all afraid all the time.
doing this. That's Jason Isbell in the 400 unit. From their self-entitled disc, Jason Isbell in the 400 unit. You know, they've got a new one out. I don't have it on this machine yet. I've been, well, actually I do, but for some reason, I guess, what, Bill Gates doesn't want to incorporate it into, go figure. It gets frustrating sometimes, but no. Jason Isbell and the 400 unit have a new album out called Here We Rest, and it is a Jim Dandy as well. I have played a cut off of it, as a matter of fact. I've just got to find it. Well worth your time and certainly worth your money. He is an amazing talent. That particular song, that resistance to fear, that unwillingness to bow to the fear-mongering that seems to be the stock in trade of the for-profit media and a certain political party in this country. No, we can't do that. We're too scared. We're busy wetting ourselves. We're Republicans. Bull. So it's 25 minutes past the hour and well past time for going to the phones. Hey, welcome to the program.
Hi.
Hey, happy birthday.
Thank you. And thank you to Agnes for that lovely birthday wish. The reason I'm calling in is, first of all, twofold.
Thank you, Dope.
Your question about what these guys get out of enhanced interrogation? That's simple. Check the area for semen stains.
Oh, yuck. But yeah, it's true.
Sorry.
But remember, no, we got to look for other stains, too, because it's not just the guys.
Oh, hey, I know it. But, you know, start there.
Right-wing women are as bad or worse.
Tell me about it, but, you know, let me...
Yeah, I think it was Dana Loesch.
Sexual stains.
It was Dana Loesch who tweeted, Jeebus. Why didn't he just do a fist pump and have done with it? Why did he have to make it all about himself? That was the trope that was immediately circulated, Susan.
Yeah.
President Obama has made this all about himself.
Oh, God. Stupid twit. Now, in regard to what's his face, I'm not going to bring up the name because I feel that it has been brought up way too much.
Plenty, yes.
Okay. The one thing that this man lived for was to have his name worldwide, everybody talking about him. I would suggest that the worst hell that man could conceive of would be to be forgotten. I suggest, let us drop him down the memory hole.
Yeah. You know, I forget who it was that wrote it, but I saw a comment earlier today saying, by another writer saying, I envy the religious crowd, because they get to be quite certain that he's in hell now, while I have to just be content with the fact that he's gone.
Yeah, well, wherever, doesn't matter. Let's just, you know, he's irrelevant now.
No, but I really do. Are you familiar with the really, really terrible Adam Sandler film, Little Nicky?
No.
Okay, well, Little Nicky is the demon son of Satan. and Harvey Keitel plays Satan. So, you know, it's...
Oh, Lord.
It was one of the few saving graces of the film, Harvey Keitel.
Oh, yeah.
But there's a scene where... like every day in hell, Satan crams a pineapple backwards, or frontwards, I suppose you would say, up the fundament of Adolf Hitler.
And I dare suspect that that's kind of what we're thinking of when we're thinking of, you know, him turning on a spit, you know. Hey, wait a minute. Wait. What is this? 70? Wait, why does everybody smell like patchouli? Shit! It's 72 vegans, you know.
You caught that that joke that was told on what's his name?
Jon Stewart?
No.
Jay Leno? David Letterman?
Letterman.
Okay. I knew we'd get it sooner or later.
Yeah, about 72 vegans.
No, I didn't.
Yeah, it was horrible.
That one right there was off the cuff, frankly.
Yeah,
Great minds think alike, maybe. I don't know.
Apparently there was or at least I think it was from Letterman, there was apparently a problem with hell, because he got down there and all he got was 72 vegans. 72 vegans.
Yeah, that, and I guess that's a take, because it was for me. I was looking for some more modern adaptation of the old 72 yeah. Virginians joke.
Yeah. But as far as I'm concerned, let's get back to fun goodies like jumping all over the oil companies, because let's face it, the oil companies are gleeful.
Oh, in terms of what it's done to the futures market? Sure.
No, but what I'm saying is they are enjoying the heck out of this, because you see, all of this attention used to be focused on them.
But they are paying attention to their messaging, Susan, because they put out a statement in the last 24 hours or so saying, we're being scapegoated.
Oh, the poor babies.
You know, when I go to the gas pump, I get something else, but it doesn't feel like scapegoating.
No. I can tell you what it feels like to me. I don't know about you, but I can tell you what it feels like to me. And I don't buy gas all that often. But these guys are just... Let's go back to screaming about the gas prices. And that's not the gas prices per se, but the gas speculators.
Yeah. Yeah, no, there's another word for those people. They're called profiteers.
Yeah. Exactly. Because let's face it.
Or pirateers, I don't know. Pick one.
Yeah. What's his face is dead. He's irrelevant now.
There you go.
So let's get back to what's important, and that is all these transnationals, headed by, of course, the oil companies, ripping us off right and left and telling us to bend over. I'm really sick of bending over. I don't know about anybody else, but I am.
But I do love this. You probably saw this earlier today. There is a congressman from Utah named Rob Bishop. He had a town hall meeting in which he said to a constituent with a straight face, there are no subsidies for oil companies. Oil companies get the same tax breaks that every other business gets. There are no special subsidies or tax breaks for oil companies, period. And his constituent says, why is that reported in newspapers and on the... Well, they like to spin it that way. Any change in oil companies was to give them the same tax structure as every other manufacturing business gets. There's nothing that is special or new or unique for these oil companies. And there are a lot of people who want to throw that spin out there. It's spin. It's crap. There's nothing here. Move along. These are not the droids you were looking for. Well, I added that last part.
Did you... that's almost as good as that guy who got up in front of his town hall and he, honest to God... He's a Republican, and his name, by the way, is Holtgren, Republican from Illinois.
Yeah.
He, honest to God, admitted that the reason he had voted for the health, he voted for the health care repeal is because he knew it had no chance of passing in the Senate.
Well, there's some political cynicism for you.
He came right out and said it, and ooh, that's gonna, oh, he's going to. He's gonna catch all sorts of problems with that.
Well, you hope, but it's the thing is though, Susan, you hope it's going to be a problem for him, but you don't know that, you don't necessarily know that to be fact. And I'm not saying you don't know it to be fact. I mean, we don't know it to be fact.
Well, the way the Tea Party has been, yeah, I pretty much know it for.
but no, what I'm getting at.
Eating for lunch.
What I'm getting at is that. In 2012, as I have said before, the Citizens United money that was spent in 2010 is going to look like the pocket change in a Salvation Army Christmas pot.
Oh, yeah.
In 2012, the Koch brothers and all the various and sundry corporate interests will form up these BS, shady, undocumentable outfits and flood the American political system, including foreign money. And it's going to where 2010 will be made to look like change jingling in the bottom of a Salvation Army pot. What happens in 2012 is going to be some real live, honest to God Jed Clampett walking around folding money.
What I want to know is what happens when a senator gets himself freshly elected. He's a freshman senator. He's all sworn in. He's all set to rock and roll. And then this lobbyist comes in and presents him with incontrovertible proof that he's been bought and paid for by the drug cartels.
And you're saying, you're asking, what does he do?
Yeah, what does he do? Does he stand up like a man and tell him to go to hell? Or does he knuckle that, or does he say, yes, sir, how do you want me to vote? What do you think he's going to do?
I think it's the latter.
So do I.
Because they know that, they know that they're bought and paid for going in. Nobody has to tell them.
Yeah, in other words, you and I both know that our government is going to be taken over by the drug cartels, the oil cartels.
I think you're using the wrong verb tense, Susan.
Yeah.
I think you're using the wrong verb tense. Because you're using the future tense.
Well, I mean,
has been.
It's going to be openly taken over. And then it's going to get, I really want to get out of this country. I really do.
Well, I can't even afford that fantasy anymore. I have to realize that my only choice is to stand and resist. And sometimes resistance is all you can do. Sometimes it's Atticus Finch stuff. And that's a bitter pill, but it's reality too. You know what I mean?
Yeah, that border 200 miles from here is looking awful, awful nice.
They wouldn't let you immigrate, Susan. They wouldn't let you immigrate.
Well,
America's population over the age of 45, in large part, ain't going anywhere.
Yeah. My only pole in the ace in the hole is the Sundays.
How do you mean?
If they continue to act the way they normally act, I can walk in on a religious
Oh, on a persecution?
Yep.
Yeah, maybe.
I claim asylum on a persecution, religious. But, you know.
Yeah.
It's just, I don't want my country to go that way, and it has, and it's just really sad.
Well, just remember, there's, generally speaking, no reverse gear on Empire.
Yeah. And it's going to get ugly before it gets better, because Empire just really get bad. You know, they don't just, you know, suddenly, they don't just, like you said, no reverse. They just crash. Just,
I know.
But in the meantime, I really would like to get off the subject of that twit in Afghanistan or in Pakistan. Because let's face it, like I said, he's dead. He's irrelevant.
He is indeed. At least to much and many of us, he is.
Yeah, isn't that a nice thought, though? He is irrelevant now.
Mm-hmm. That's why I said yesterday, you know, cue the munchkins.
Yeah. Now, if we can just take care of the rest of our issues. Holy day. Okay. Anyway, I will let you get on to the rest of your phone calls.
All right. Well, you have a good rest of your birthday evening. And other birthday wishes are rolling in, so.
Well, thank you much. And give my love to Agnes and all the kids.
I sure will. You take care, Susan.
They sang a very, very nice happy birthday to me.
God, don't say that on the air. I'll have to pay royalties. Thanks for all you do, dear. You take care.
Love. Bye-bye.
Bye now. News Ninja Susan. Celebrating a birthday today. Hey, welcome to the program.
Bob, this is Andy.
Hey, Andy, how you doing?
All right, how about yourself?
I'm holding up, trying to stay out of the rain.
That's good. Happy birthday to Susan, by the way.
Thank you, on her behalf. Thank you.
I got an inclination to call. I heard you yesterday on the show, and a matter of fact, there was an individual, a Marine who got on named Mark.
Yeah, that's Mark.
Shout out to Mark, man. You're not the only one out there that feels that way, but man, you really hung it out there, and God bless you, man. Because he did an exemplary job.
And you know, that's the kind of thing that can only happen in places like this.
Well, you got that right. He brought it all up from the word go when things started going bad after JFK, and you talked about the lies before. That's the whole thing, Bob. We've been lied to since we were put on the face of this earth in this country. It just never ends.
And we've been, and the saddest part,
our own good, but
the saddest part, though, Andy, is
unbelievable.
We've been lied to the point that we are almost at a point now of being able to we're so jaded and so gun shy, sorry for the image, but it's what it is, that we don't know what is, we don't know what the truth is or who to believe. And
absolutely,
you know what? That's a really unhealthy place for a country that presumes to govern itself.
Absolutely. You know, and I got another thing, and I know you went into this yesterday, but I think you hit it on the nose. Justice. What is justice? And I agree with you. And I've heard other people say the same thing and others on the other side. But if you don't have a trial, if you don't bring things out into the open, if you don't actually explain things to people and it doesn't get out there and debated and people start thinking with those stupid noggins they have, and a lot of people, you know, I heard a lot, especially in New York and Washington, just said, yeah, and then you have Obama saying the same thing, that this is like Western style wild, wild west justice where you just blow the guy's head off and that's justice. And that's not justice. That's an execution. It's not justice.
Yeah, it's vengeance. I don't say that, Andy, because I'm critical of having taken the guy out. I just say that because I believe in a little bit of intellectual honesty.
Right. And the Nuremberg trials, and there's this movie out called The Conspirator.
Oh, I so want to see that.
Right, by Redford, that goes into, you know, what happened in the Lincoln assassination. And
Mary Surratt was hung out to dry when all she was a landlady.
Yeah, they just needed somebody to take the fall. You know, they needed somebody to persecute, and she just happened to be in the wrong place.
Well, she was a Southern sympathizer running a boarding house in, you know.
Right, where John Wilkes Booth and the gang who conspirators happened to be meeting.
But what's interesting is the conspiracy. Historically, the conspiracy, but it even goes a little bit deeper. I don't know if this is in the film. The conspiracy that was hatched in Mary Surratt's boarding house was not the assassination of Abraham Lincoln. The assassination that was hatched.
Further than that.
No. It didn't go as far as that. The conspiracy that was hatched in Mary Surratt's boarding house, which is now a Chinese carryout restaurant in Chinatown, it's still there.
Right.
It's the walk and roll the carryout restaurant, I think. Cute, isn't it? Walk and roll. The conspiracy that was hatched there was to kidnap Lincoln. And a number, and I think some cabinet secretaries, or maybe some congressional types.
They wanted to get Seward, and they wanted to get the Vice President Johnson.
And hold them for ransom in exchange for concessions to the South.
Right, and they did actually there was a knife attack, I think, on Seward, and Johnson was also attacked the same night as Lincoln was assassinated.
Yeah, it devolved into an assassination plot from there, but it's not at all clear that assassination plot was hatched there.
Right.
Even though the government propaganda swore up and down that it was.
Right. Well, this gets into, you know, the topic I want to discuss was justice. And, you know, here's a guy, I'm not a constitutional lawyer. You know, I didn't go to Harvard. I don't have the background of a bomb. I went to a little place called Shippensburg up in your neighborhood.
Yeah, I know Shippensburg State.
Right, but I understand if you don't have a trial, if you don't have an open debate whether somebody's good, they're presumed innocent until guilty. But Obama did the same thing when he came here to San Francisco with Bradley Manning. He told the people in the crowd after they did that orange juice serenade that he got about the torture of Bradley Manning, that he told Bradley Manning was guilty. Bradley Manning was guilty. He's guilty. The President of the United States tells me he's guilty. This guy's a whistleblower, man. Oh, no. Obama says he's not a whistleblower. He's a criminal. What is happening?
Well, it's really not for him to say either way.
But he did.
He's charged, you know, as a member of the military, there's a vastly different set of rules that attach to criminal prosecutions.
Right. Here's a guy that unleashed a tape of Reuters reporters getting their heads blown off, among other people that were following along with them, and a bunch of little kids by a bunch of jockeys in helicopters just having a good old time knocking out unarmed people. And he let that video out. And why doesn't Obama realize that that's one of the main things he did, and everything else he's done, as far as I'm concerned, again, opening up our government to transparency that we never get. The things that have come out on that are legion. I mean, there's so many. If he was even responsible for that, which I don't know, but I know he's responsible for the video. And that video, well, I don't know for sure, but it's assumed that he did do the video at least. But that video is a whistleblowing exercise that he uncovered an unjust war crime. And why Obama, that doesn't get through Obama's head, I'll never know. I don't know what's happened to this guy. But he doesn't understand justice.
Well, I think, Andy, I'll tell you what I think happened to him. I think the presidency happened to him.
Yeah. It's really gotten to his head, and he's not.
Well, it didn't just go to his head. It goes to the head of every person who gets in there, because the presidency comes in and is placed titularly in charge of the national security state. It's the national security state is the problem. because the national security state is the little get out of jail free card that a government that wants to shroud itself in secrecy uses at its convenience.
Right, executive privilege, here we go.
You know, were funds misused at Baskin-Robbins on Tuesday, the 12th of June, 2009? I'm sorry, that's a national security secret, and you're not entitled to know. And the judge goes, national security, case closed.
Right. Right. So essentially, these son of a bees are above the law, and they can do anything they damn well please. Anything they please. I'll bet you Bush, too. I'll bet you he was friggin' frantic when he found out that these guys found out where Osama bin Laden was. Because, you know, I don't have any doubts that people knew where Osama bin Laden, and there was some kind of deal done to keep him incommunicado in Pakistan, that he would never see the light of day. He would be a good boy and not cause any problems, and then he would just die, you know, of old age. And that was a deal that was done and I believe Bush did that. I have no proof of that, but I believe Bush did that. I'll bet you Bush was surprised as hell when he found out they actually tracked them down. And boy, if there were a trial and there were things allowed to get out, I bet you that'd be pretty darn interesting. You know, you talked about truthers earlier today. I might not be a truther, but I'll tell you one thing. I do know the government story we got isn't the true story.
Well, see, I don't have any problem saying that. The 9/11, you know, when the 9/11 commission was originally formed and they wanted it to be headed by Henry Kissinger, excuse me,
that ought to tell you something right there, right?
And it went forward. It went forward, and George and Dick were not sworn, and they were, and George was only allowed to speak to the commission as long as he was doing it while sitting on Dick's lap. You know, giving Dick Cheney a lap dance. Oh, that's just gross. I know.
Isn't it?
I don't have a problem with that. I don't have a problem with the idea that maybe they looked away.
I definitely believe they did.
I mean, when you get a report entitled "Bin Laden Determined to Strike Inside U.S." and you pass it off to a functionary and go back to cutting brush,
Condoleezza Rice, yes sir, Condoleezza Rice. Obama plans to attack the U.S.
Osama.
Beautiful. Yeah. Osama. Right.
Yeah, but see, you corrected yourself, Andy. And that's the thing. This is happening left and right on right-wing media, and they don't correct themselves. That's how you tell the difference.
That guy Cunningham you played the other day. They will not. They'll just let the psychological effect wind its way through your brain.
Yeah, and I've got one from none other than the Beckerhead. You know, he did it too.
Right.
I mean, you know, what a piece of crap. But, you know, for me, it's a matter of, I don't know how to put it any other way than I put it, Andy. And that is that I insist, and this is just the broad form of me and my life. There's a lot of stuff that I am not willing to allow into my psyche. Zombie gods, tooth fairies, Santa Claus, Easter bunnies, or the idea that this is still some sort of participatory democracy, Republican-based democracy in which the voice of the people matters much. It doesn't.
Yeah.
The voice, and I mean, mostly it's a cynical view, and I acknowledge that, and it is not a situation that is utterly incurable, but I'd say it's about 90-10 against, because the things that would have to happen in order to cure this are almost impossible to accomplish. One of them, And perhaps it's ground level, is get the money out of politics. You know, it's not, and the fact that a law as simple as this could not get through Congress tells you everything you really needed to know. I have said for years, Andy, that it doesn't have to be anything complex. All it has to be is a simple statute that says the compensation, well, I mean, that's constitutional, the compensation of the members of the House. shall be fixed. You know, it's a fixed rate. And of the Senate, and of all, you know, of all elected officials shall be a fixed rate. And you, right. And you, you put an addendum on that, and they shall not receive one thin dime from any outside entity whatsoever. And you attach a penalty to it, saying that if anyone is caught taking one thin dime extra or more, you put them in a big burlap bag with a weasel and throw them in the Potomac.
You mean one dime more of government funding or all election?
No, from any outside source. And then you set up, a public funding of campaign scheme, and boom, you're done.
Right.
And from there, you can start getting. From there, you can start getting the different cross section of people into the electoral process.
Right.
And you might, you might wind up with something that's unwieldy, or you might wind up with something's better, or something that's worse. But it will not be perverted by corporate money.
Yeah, definitely. Getting the money out will go a heck of a long. Like you just said, maybe we'd actually win the battle of ideas if ideas were what were voted on and not propaganda being pushed by big money. I mean, you'd also have to take out a lot of the PAC sort of advertisement stuff and get rid of all that. And they have done that in England, places like that. They don't do that. Can't do that stuff. Can't advertise for candidates or advertise for issues. That's a no-no.
Yeah.
You know, it's just got to be grassroots.
And somehow or another, Canada managed to have an election without without. I don't know. Does Canada have video game voting machines? I don't know.
No, they don't. We're the only place that does, I believe. No, they got rid of all their electronic machines. No electronic machines in Canada. You see, their Liberal Party, the National Democrats, I think, something like NDP, I think it is, got the most seats they'd ever gotten in their history. Now they're they didn't get a majority, but now they're the new minority party, and they've never been liberals have never been the minority before, supposedly. So that's a plus. They made a lot of hits. They garnered a lot of seats, a lot more seats than they'd ever had before. Germany, same way. Of course, the liberals are making some great headways. I wish we had the same thing happening here, but the rest of the world seems to be getting it.
But that's the thing. If you want, you know, there's some historicity here involved here, Andy, and that is you have to go. And this is not going to be a Clinton bashing fest. You got to go back to Bill Clinton, and the problem that Bill Clinton was faced with was that in the previous election cycles, the Democrats had begun to just get uniformly hammered because they were getting outmoneyed to death. So Clinton, being a brilliant man, and he is, I mean, the man is about a million times more intelligent than George Bush on his best day, either one of them.
You know, he might be a brilliant man, but he's got no ethics or morals or scruples. End of story with Bill Clinton. He sold us down the river.
Well, and that's the whole point, Andy.
Wall Street, Bob. He sold us out to Wall Street.
That's what I'm getting at. He looked at the question.
Siegel, that was it.
Yeah, he looked at the question of how do we get Democrats money to compete with the Republicans. Now, you and I looking at that question, I think we just saw what our answer would be. We would try to get the money out of politics. Bill Clinton's answer was to get more money into politics and to become more Republican and more so-called moderate, in other words, marching to the right, so that you could become attractive to Wall Street money. Now, he was very successful with it, and the price of that success was, as you have just suggested, Andy, Glass-Steagall.
The crushing of the middle class.
Glass-Steagall.
The middle class, right.
And the looting of the middle class and the looting of the commons and everything that went with it.
Right. And don't forget the Commodities Futures Modernization Act of 2000, which really allowed the credit default swaps to take off as a huge unregulated market, which brought us down, and also the securitization of mortgage-backed securities, collateral debt obligations. That was done under Clinton as well. And that was a major force in just destroying our economic system as well. That was another Phil Graham piece of legislation thrown into a budget bill in 2000. Commodity Futures Modernization Act of 2000 really let the cat out of the bag, too, and he signed off on that. You know, just two other items I wanted, since we're on a little economic stuff. On April 22nd, there was a story run in the New York Times about a company called Taylor Bean & Whitaker, which is a big mortgage company. And they nailed this guy named Frakes, who was the CEO, on 14 counts of fraud. And there's a whole long story about it. But when people say that nobody's been brought to justice in this current economic environment, you know, like they complain that Reagan brought like 200 executives in the savings and loan crisis to justice. At least this guy from this company, Taylor Bean & Whitaker, is going to jail. And there's a number of other people, too, that will probably go down, too. And the Colonial Bank of Montgomery, Alabama, is involved in this. There's a number of people there caught up in it. But the bummer is about this whole thing. They found they were writing all these fraudulent loans in, like, 2002, and Fannie Mae cut them off. But then after that, Freddie Mac and Ginny Mae picked up the business from them, and they wrote like over 14,000 loans worth over $3 billion. Worth over $80 billion after Fannie Mae had cut them off, which was a real shame. And they're going to go down. A bunch of people there are going down. So you can't say that, just for your listeners, you can't say that Obama and his Justice Department is going to bring justice to somebody anyway. Just wanted to bring that out.
Right, and there's been a law, a statute proposed that I find kind of interesting. Of course, it doesn't have a snowball's chance in hell, but Peter Dreyer at Alternet has a piece today called "Make Wall Street Pay for the Catastrophe They Caused." New bill would fine banks $20,000 for each foreclosure.
That'd be nice. You probably wouldn't see too many more foreclosures if they did that. I mean, it starts getting time when, you know, just me. Although 20,000 might not be high enough, but you want it.
And this is, you know, this is a bill. This is a bill.
Bank to foreclose.
This isn't something that's being offered nationally. This is a bill that's being introduced in the California legislature.
That's great.
It's sponsored by Assemblyman Bob Blumenfield, a Democrat from L.A. It's called the Foreclosure Mitigation Fee, and it's AB 935 if you want to do a little research.
Okay. You know, it makes absolutely no sense to me that banks even do foreclosures, and then they end up selling at these exorbitantly low prices anyway, like maybe 50% or 70% off. And why not just keep the person that's there in there and give them the same offer that you just took by taking this huge write down and causing all these problems and all this great anxiety and total decimation of the public who has to get bankrupted and thrown out of their home? Instead, why don't you give them that low price? But instead, they throw it on the market and they don't get any money back from the foreclosed property anyway because the market's been so dead. It makes absolutely no sense.
But on the right,
that would be a good idea.
But on the write down, Andy, don't they get a huge tax break?
It's a loss, yeah.
And doesn't that explain why that's more profitable to do than to make the same offer and keep the person in their home?
If they offered it to that person in the home, couldn't they write it in some fashion where they took the loss on that individual, too? Could they write a whole new mortgage? I don't know. Yeah,
I think if you write a whole new mortgage, you've got a whole new transaction, and therefore you don't have a loss.
You take a loss on the old transaction. The previous mortgage has to go away when you write a new one. It has to take the place of the old one on your books, and the old one on your books is at a much higher, I don't want to say the word, it's a principal is going to be huge, so you're going to take a huge loss in principal with the new mortgage that replaces the old one. I mean, why not? What's the difference replacing a mortgage with a person who already had the old mortgage or replacing it with a new person? I don't think, to me, there's not a difference.
It doesn't. Well, to me, it doesn't sound like either. But I get very, very careful when walking in this in these woods because I'm completely out of my depth.
Right. You know, there's a a bill in 10 states now coming up, too, which I wanted to mention, which would really be a good idea. One thing we have to do is we have to get the money out of Wall Street. See, one thing Glass-Steagall did was it took all the deposit money and it gave it to the big banks. The big banks are accumulating deposits like crazy, and they use those deposits to do speculation and to do all kind of shenanigans with depositors' money. And if we could take the deposits out of New York, out of the big bulge bracket banks, and bring them back to the states, bring them back to Main Street, that would do a lot to help this country. So there's some bills in different state legislatures, and California has one called AB 750, to start a state bank, just like North Dakota has the only state bank right now. But I think that would be a great idea. Get the money out of these New York banks and put them into the local bank, which a lot of people have talked about. But if you have a state bank...
So if you've got a state bank, for instance, maybe state pension funds are associated with it then?
Right. But there's so much business you could do to just give the state government, could just give that bank, instead of going to the big banks and the B of A's of the world and the J.P. Morgan's Chase...
Well, God, you've got to... Andy, you've got to think that the Wall Street... lobbyists are hot and heavy on top of that one, wouldn't you?
Oh, sure. They'd want to kill that in a second. But it's out there. In California, it's called AB 750. So.
Cool.
But that's something else for your listeners to try to push your state to do. What was the other bill you were just talking about that the guy from Los Angeles with the mortgage...
Well, that would impose a $20,000 fine on each foreclosure.
Right. Did you say 938?
935,
okay. I don't have a pen on me right now, unfortunately, to write it down, but I will in a second as soon as I go back to where my desk is.
Yeah, I'm looking. I'm trying to get it back now.
Okay.
All
right, great. 935.
Yeah. And, I mean, I like the idea, but then again, I like the idea of a state bank, too, at least as you describe it. But, of course, since it's subject to the political process, and, again, subject to dirty money in the political process, I'm sure somebody can screw it up. But, yeah, it is AB 935.
Okay. Yeah, I'll have to talk to my local legislators about it. I was talking to him the other day, a matter of fact, about AB 750, and quite frankly, neither one of them had even heard about it.
It projects, Andy, something on the order of $12 billion of revenue over the next 2 years.
That's the AB 935?
Yeah.
Yeah, that'd be great. Punish these people for throwing people out of their homes. Sounds good to me.
At least make them think twice.
They're punishing us.
And what was the story I saw a couple of days ago? That, and maybe I'm getting it wrong because I don't have it in front of me, but something on the order of some monumental proportion of the people working foreclosures in Florida were convicted felons or something.
I didn't see that.
Well, maybe I dreamed it, but it.
Most of the work is contract. You know, a lot of these big banks, they contract out to somebody.
Well, hell, maybe they're convicted felons because it's prison labor.
Yeah, and they're just looking for the cheapest administrative. I wouldn't doubt if a lot of it is done in places like Ireland or India, too. They'll just contract out if it's a lot of paperwork, and they'll just sign the signatures, too, you know, which is that other debacle where they have people signing these foreclosure signatures and going through the paperwork just so they have these signatures. It's just like, you know, a signing, just a mill that they work. They try to make it into a production line. Anything to save a buck. It's a shame.
Yeah.
You know, what we really got to get back to is just the local community bank where everybody knows everybody. They hold on to the loans. They hold on to the local mortgages. Not the securitization where these mortgages are flying around the world and they're collateralized and they're aggregated together and the credit ratings are put on it. That's all baloney and overhead and, you know, total BS. If we got back to the old way of doing things, I think we'd be so much better off. Keep it conservative, man. When it comes to a bank, it should be a damn utility. That's it. Just a utility.
Yeah.
And, you know, highly managed and highly localized. And keep it in your local community. Once you start flying around the world with that stuff, you really lose control over the whole situation. and you have these middlemen in New York, you know, making the big money and skimming the dollars off of that, which is killing us. Anyway, that's my thing. Keep it local. Bank locally.
And you know what? If you can find one, and that, you know, you don't have to wait for government action. If you can find a local bank to do business with, do some do a little bit of legwork, find out that they really are local and that they're not the local derivative of the great big bank of whatever, you know.
And the best thing is a credit union.
Oh.
Go to a credit union. They're non-profit. That's the best way to go.
Well, the fact of the matter is the Horn account, and it comes at some inconvenience because the only branch is, you know, 50 miles from here in Charleston, but the Horn account is at a credit union.
Great.
You know, where when we take the contributions and we go and we pay all the bills that we have, it's written on a credit union.
You know, it's funny, Bob. I did one of those U.S. Uncut deals where you protest in front of the banks.
Yeah.
And we did a B of A bank here in San Mateo. We were out in front there for a couple hours, right before, tax day. I think it was a couple of days before. Anyway, I was out there and I'm talking to one of the guys I'm there protesting with. And I was talking to him about, you know, where do you have your bank? And we got into the thing, where do you have your bank account? And he goes, at Bank of America. I go, what? You're out here protesting at bank, you got your money in Bank
of
America. Oh! I go, what are you
do we have a disconnect here?
Oh, he goes, I can't take it out. It's too convenient. They have the ATMs all over the place. It's so easy. I go, man, if you go with a credit union, they have reciprocal agreements, and you can go to any credit union just about. And it's no problem, believe me. You're just keeping your money in Bank of America because of the ATM. You nuts, and you're out here protesting? I mean, what are you, you know, cut off your nose to spite your face, man. What, are you nuts? Oh, geez, some people just kill me. It's not that hard.
I know.
Money out.
I know.
All right. Thanks a lot, man.
Thanks, Andy. That had to make you just a little bit crazy.
We are standing in front of a bank with signs, and the guy's got his money in the bank. Oh, mercy.
Dear God. Thanks, Andy.
All right. Take care.
Bye now.
Great job. Bye bye.
Thank you. Andy calling from Northern California. 11 minutes past the hour, and before a couple of lines open, if you want to get in on the conversation, you know the number, 877-443-2366, 877-4, and then HEADON, 304-658-3333 is the non-toll-free direct dial number. Of course, toll-free versus non-toll-free in many ways doesn't matter anymore in the age of cellular telephony. You know, the big thing that's developing right now, and see, we're not talking about things that aren't Bin Laden. Ah, I hate myself sometimes. But I've got a Wikipedia entry up in front of me because it just sort of dawned on me. One of the big things that's going around right now is, well, he was unarmed and they done shot him down. Right? As if this is something new in America. You remember, many of you, I know, you watched the video of Nicole Sandler getting arrested the other night in Florida for daring to question that lunatic Alan West. And you saw that the officer's hands were all over Nicole Sandler when she turned and said, "Get your hands off of me!" The guy, he was wearing a white shirt. He may not have actually even been a cop. May have been a rent-a-cop, because he turned her over to a real cop, if you watch the video. And at that point, he arrested her for, what was it, resisting with warning, or trespassing with warning, but claimed that by saying, "Get your hands off me," that she had resisted arrest. Resisting arrest is one of the oldest dirty tricks in the playbook in America in law enforcement. It's ridiculous. Resisting arrest is when you... But no, resisting arrest in America is not... it's anything that the cop says it is. So now the current thing coming out is that Bin Laden resisted by not putting his hands over his head, you know, because when you scream in English, put your hands over your head, and the guy doesn't speak English and he sits there looking at you like a, well, you know. But just a gentle reminder that there's nothing new in this conduct. This from Wikipedia. Dillinger attended the film Manhattan Melodrama at the Biograph Theater in Chicago's Lincoln Park neighborhood. Dillinger was with Polly Hamilton and Anna Campagnas. Once they determined that Dillinger was in the theater, the lead agent, Samuel P. Cowley, contacted J. Edgar Hoover for instructions, who recommended that they wait outside rather than risk a gun battle in a crowded theater. He also told the agents not to put themselves in harm's way, and that any man could open fire on Dillinger at the first sign of resistance. When the movie let out, Special Agent Melvin Purvis stood by the front door and signaled Dillinger's exit by lighting a cigar. Both he and the agents reported that Dillinger turned his head and looked directly at the agent as he walked by, glanced across the street, then moved ahead of his female companions, reached into his pocket, but failed to extract his gun and ran into a nearby alley. Three agents opened fire, firing five shots. Dillinger was hit from behind, and they shot him in the back. Dillinger was hit from behind, and he fell face first to the ground. Two female bystanders were slightly wounded in the legs and buttocks by flying bullet and brick fragments. Dillinger was struck three times, twice in the chest, one actually nicking his heart, and the fatal shot, which entered the back of his neck and exited just under his right eye. In this case, I suppose it was a tap, tap, tap. Although three agents shot Dillinger, Charles Winstead was believed to be the man who fired the fatal shot, the one which went through Dillinger's head. Dillinger's body was displayed to the public at the Cook County morgue after his death. In the end, Bin Laden was treated like a dirty damn crook who was on the lam. In the end, Bin Laden was treated like John Dillinger was treated. No, Ray, I am not comparing Bin Laden with Nicole Sandler. No. It's about the concept of what constitutes resisting arrest. Resisting arrest is whatever the guy with the gun in his hands says it is. And 99 times out of 100, the courts will back him up. In this case, there will be no need even for a court. Don't get mad at me. Don't tell me that I'm defending or exonerating. No. I am merely telling you what reality is in this country, in empire. You see? We have to take into account the circumstances in which these things occur, because they do not occur in a vacuum. As ignorant as he sounded, when George W. Bush said, "We got a Shane down in Texas, maybe I'll got a Shane here too, wanted, dead or alive," he wasn't kidding. And you'll notice that in all the Wild West wanted posters, that's the way it's phrased. Wanted, dead or alive. Dead comes first. You see? Now, going back to Andy's conversation, Ron and Raleigh says, we need a STET, S-T-E-T, to slow down the constant stirring of the market and all the high-speed stock trading. A securities transaction excise tax. Might suck out some of the speculation, kind of like venom out of a wound. Lines open if you want to jump in. I trust you know the number. Let's go to the phones. Hey, welcome to the program. Cossack, what's up, man?
Yeah, not too much. You know, I still have questions about the demise of the new Satan. You remember how crazed everybody in America was by the propaganda of some people cheering and chanting and dancing in the streets in the Mideast? And how
the right wing's still talking about it.
Yeah. And what have we done for the last week? Do you really see any difference?
Not a lot.
USA! USA! Hey!
Yeah, like it's a hockey game.
You people are freaking idiots.
But I don't know, maybe I'm a... I guess one of the things that bothers me about it, Cossack, is not that they're doing it, but that they're doing it, for what? It ain't over. You know, you go out in the streets and you kiss the sailor kisses the pretty girl in Times Square because the war is really, 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 no kidding, honest to Jesus, over, and he doesn't have to go get torpedoed by a U-boat somewhere.
Exactly. But what happened here? Are we leaving Afghanistan? Why are we in Afghanistan? This guy wasn't even in Afghanistan. They're off by country.
No, but the fact that we were in Afghanistan made it possible to get him in Pakistan. That's the reasoning. You know, I mean, put $5 on it.
Yeah.
That's the reason we'll stay there.
But what legal reasoning did we have to get him in Pakistan? Isn't that
violating
sovereign rights?
Badges? We don't need no stinking badges.
Badges, yeah. Well.
I mean, the Israelis do it. We can do it, right?
Well, yeah, I don't like when they do it either. It's just, you know, if we're going to have...
But what about Entebbe?
Entebbe was a different situation.
I mean, the guy was not a sovereign. The hijackers were not sovereign.
Right.
Neither was bin Laden. Now, granted, Entebbe, they were holding hostages that they were about
to
kill.
Exactly.
Bin Laden had already done his killing.
That still remains to be seen. Again, I would have wanted to see the trial. But he could never come to trial because we would all hear...
Well, Obama does want to get reelected, and saying that we were going to bring him to trial would have been a surefire guarantee of how not to get that way.
Oh, exactly. And plus, I mean, can you imagine what would come out at trial?
Well, but let's get beyond that for a minute, Cossack. It's not just that. The American people are not a people who love or crave justice anymore, if they ever were. And by that I mean that...
Vengeance they want.
Yeah. Unless it's their fat that's in the fire, and then they want mercy.
Oh, of course.
And to a certain extent, you can't just write that off to being American. That is a human response.
Dispensation. We have a special dispensation. We don't want mercy.
If you hate somebody and you happen to be a religionist, you want God to deal out some celestial justice. But if it's your ass that has the boils and the leprosy, you want mercy.
Right.
Never understanding, as Twain did, as Twain at least argued in the war prayer, that when you're praying for sunshine on your crops... You're praying for somebody else's crops to be mercilessly baked by that same sun.
Exactly. And furthermore, I think I'm jumping aboard the 14th Amendment bandwagon.
Get rid of it?
Yes, sir. And do you know why?
Yeah, to get rid of corporate citizenship.
Bingo! It's the only thing they have going for them.
No, it's not. I'm not being a dick or anything, but no, it's not.
True. They've got the Supreme Court.
No.
By the point.
No. They got something else. Money. Lots and lots of money.
Right.
You know, it's the witch in the tower going, money, money will make them, you know, happies.
Money make the world go round.
Yeah, exactly. But the thing is, if you did get rid of the 14th Amendment, it would be used like a nail-studded baseball bat on the most fragile people in this country.
Oh, I know, I know. I was being facetious, but if there is any upside to that, I would go out there and make that a plank. You know, let's get rid of the 14th Amendment to kill corporate citizenship. Kill corporate personhood. Let's see how quick they would be about repealing that. If that were to come out as a salient phrase. They wouldn't like that a whole hell of a lot. Because at the moment, all of their assertions of personhood are misascribed in an incorrectly written headnote to a case that had nothing to do with personhood.
Yeah, Santa Clara versus Union Pacific.
Correct. That didn't have thing one to do with corporate personhood.
Of course, that's all. That case also comes to life in an era as corrupt as any other that has existed in the history of the United States, including this one.
About where we're at right now, yeah.
Only with more of a Wild West flavor to it, Cossack, because the law, there was nothing codified. They didn't have to evade any laws. They just were the law.
Yeah.
And there's a reason that it's a railroad case, because the rise of the corporate state rides the rails, so to speak.
And that's where the expression, you've been railroaded, came from.
Yeah. Indeed.
Yeah.
So it's. I guess I'm just weird. Going back to that football analogy I used with Sandra last night, I just want to act like we've been there before.
Yeah.
That this is the kind of thing we do, and when we do it professionally. I mean. And we move on to the next job. Now, if we're going to become an assassin state, for instance, a lot of people said, well, this will certainly serve as a clear warning to Gaddafi. No, it won't. We're not legally entitled to do that to Gaddafi. We are, in fact, legally forbidden from doing that to Gaddafi.
Yeah.
For a very, very good reason.
It's an awful feeble read.
But I mean, it's for a good reason, because we don't want people doing it to ours.
Right. But the reason we don't assassinate foreign leaders was an executive order that Ford put forth. For that reason, he certainly didn't want to become the target of assassinations. But this is the thing. We do this. We do this all the time. We tried to do it to Milosevic. We blew up his house. The fact that he wasn't in it is the only thing that saved his life.
But, you know, this article earlier today by Glenn Greenwald that equated the 1983 Reagan bombing of Gaddafi's granddaughter with the killing of bin Laden, that was just a little loopy, frankly.
No. It's not the same thing.
And I think one of the reasons that this operation was carried out the way it was, is specifically because, I mean, can we just give Obama a little credit once in a while without being accused of not being sufficiently left pure enough?
Oh, sure.
The guy took a pass on high altitude bombing.
Yeah.
Because it was verified that there were women and children in the place. He also took a pass on a cruise missile strike for the same reasons.
Right.
Instead, he put, and I'm sure the right wing can figure out a way to hate him for this. Instead, he put American military and intelligence personnel in harm's way at risk and got the job done in workmanlike fashion and managed to do it with, and I feel really guilty, I feel that some, I may get the, oh, now you're a hypocrite emails, but with a minimized loss of life. They killed people who were shooting at them.
And they took out a few that weren't, but, you know, that happens.
You know, Bin Laden was unarmed. Well, yeah. Dillinger couldn't, Dillinger pulled, stuck his hand in his pocket but didn't pull out a pistol.
Yeah. Well, the thing, the fact that he was unarmed, again, my problem is I wanted to see him tried, like you. I wanted to see justice done.
Well, I want to live in, I want to live in a country that's not afraid to let its justice, that has enough confidence in its justice system to know that the system will reach the right conclusions.
Right.
And what we're saying in many, and it's not just Bin Laden, it's all, it's the fact that we chickened out from trying Khalid Sheikh Mohammed.
Mm-hmm.
We chickened out.
Yeah.
And instead we're going to give him the kangaroo court treatment. By a bunch of guys in costumes with embroidery on their shoulders.
Well, going back to the conspirator, that's exactly what happened to her. It was a military tribunal.
Right. And if there's a lesson to be had, Cossack, they came to the wrong conclusion. That military tribunal, that kangaroo court.
Oh, of course. I mean, Payne, they had every reason to hang. Atzerodt, he was so drunk that that's the reason he didn't attack Johnson, because he was too damn drunk.
Yeah, he set out to drink his courage and wound up, well, you know.
Yeah.
There aren't marks on the bottles that say courage starts here, ends here.
And
he very well may have seen two or three Johnsons, right?
Oh, yeah. And, you know, Payne did do his worst with Seward and mangled him up pretty well, but...
Interesting that they went after Johnson, Seward, and Lincoln and left Stanton out of the mix. When Stanton was the most evil bastard among them.
The most dangerous, anyway. And,
because didn't Stanton hate Lincoln's guts?
At the beginning, he got to like him after a while.
Okay, I'm found wanting in that particular area, but I remembered something along those lines.
He got to respect him grudgingly, but still he did after a while. Trust me, Lincoln was hardly the worst of the bunch.
Oh no, 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 no.
I still say we should take Lincoln's idea, shut down the goddamn Fed, and print greenbacks. Issue our own money, in other words, instead of issuing it through private banks. What a thought.
Well, there was Andy talking about a state bank out in California. I get the idea that this is going to be a discussion for the 21st century. It may revert to the great debate over the Bank of the United States.
It's North Dakota. North Dakota is the only state to has its own bank. Ellen Brown and Web of Debt. She explains it very, very well.
But I mean, you remember that one of the fundamental arguments and most heated disagreements of the early republic was over whether or not to create a Bank of the United States.
Oh yeah, yeah.
And oddly enough, Andrew Jackson hated the idea.
Mm-hmm. And you remember who he was fighting with?
No.
The head of the Bank of the United States?
Salmon P. Chase?
No. Oh. I mean Biddle.
Oh, yeah, Biddle.
The Mayflower Madam, that Biddle. It's the same family.
Nothing changes.
They're all pimps and purveyors.
Where did I get Salmon Chase?
Oh, he was corrupt as all get out. He was Lincoln's treasury.
Yeah, he was Lincoln's treasury secretary. Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. But I mean, these are what I find interesting is that we find ourselves debating over ground that we have traversed before.
Yeah.
And it seems to be a debate that is driven with the same forces on the same sides.
Mm-hmm.
But ultimately, like I was talking with Andy about, if you're going to have a serious discussion about changing the fundamental nature of American politics, it has to begin with some way or another removing the filthy money from the process.
Oh, I agree. That's until we have elections that are paid for by the government, they will dole out the money. You will not have any money coming from any other source, period. End of quotation. No PACs, no private money. If you get any money that doesn't come from your from the government for your campaign, if you get any money at all, we put you in jail for bribery. Very simple.
Yeah, that's what I was getting at.
You know,
I was being facetious when I said, you know, put them in a burlap bag and throw them in the Potomac with a weasel.
That's not a bad idea either, but
but it's like we don't, and this element goes back, Cossack, to our prison industrial complex and our punishment fetish. Left to their own desserts, the members of Congress can come up with more and horrifying punishments for so-called hot-button crimes in this country, like, you know, a 19-year-old kid with a $10 rock of crack in his pocket.
Mm-hmm.
That kid we can figure out all manner of torture for.
Correct.
But if they're actually sitting there contemplating the definition and punishment of a crime that involves potentially themselves, one, getting them to define the crime is near impossible, and if they do, then getting them to define the punishment as something more than 30 lashes with a sodden noodle is approaching impossible. Because they're not, any human being who sat in contemplation of a law such as I described with Andy would potentially be passing a law against himself.
Yeah.
Because they're, with almost no exceptions, although I think there are some, they'd be passing a law that could conceivably be used against themselves.
Exactly.
Speaking of which, since the Republicans have gerrymandered Dennis Kucinich out of a district,
uh-huh.
Have you seen the late, and this is nothing but gossip, but have you seen the latest gossip?
No.
Ohio is losing 2 congressional seats, but the state of Washington is gaining 1. It's a seat that it doesn't exist right now and isn't occupied as such. And there's a lot of speculation out there, and it is nothing more than rank speculation, that Dennis Kucinich might just pick up stakes and move to the appropriate district in the state of Washington. And I can think of several people that would be thrilled to death to hear that.
Oh, yeah.
And I'll bet you Dennis and Elizabeth both would simply love it, especially if it's somewhere around Seattle.
Oh, hell yeah.
Which it kind of has to be, doesn't it?
Yeah.
Because there was
population growth.
Population growth in the area.
Yeah. Yeah, give them a chance to get out of Ohio.
Yeah. So that could be very interesting. How you doing? You feeling better? Feeling okay these days?
No.
No.
It's been kind of sad recently.
Well, I know you lost a cat.
No, the cat's still here.
Oh, I thought I saw something in the chat room that one of your animal friends had gone on.
No, the pit bull that we were babysitting finally got picked up, and the cat is missing her.
Oh.
Cats be pretty good friends. A pit bull and this tiny little kitty.
You know, maybe that's where you have a conversation with the cat and say, listen, maybe you're better off. You'll always have Paris.
I mean, she keeps on attacking the dog's rope toy and rubbing herself in it and getting dog smell all over her.
Oh, bless her little heart.
They are sweet.
Indeed. Well, you hang in there, and I look forward to hearing from you again soon.
All right, Bob.
All right. Take care, Cossack. Bye now.
Give Agnes a big hug and a kiss.
I sure will.
All right. Take care.
Bye. The Cossack calling from North Florida. Look, we may actually accomplish some of this after all. You know, news that isn't about him. Saw a couple that just sort of jumped out at me. One statistical and another real world. You may recall a case that I mentioned, man, that mouse in my pocket, that I mentioned on this program some time back. There is a young lady out there who has a court case. And she is known only by her initials because she was protected because she was a minor. Her initials are HS. HS was a high school cheerleader. She got dumped from the cheerleading squad because at a basketball game, she refused to stand up and cheer at a free throw for a young man by the name of Rakeem Bolton, a star on the Silsbee High School football team. She refused to cheer for him because he had raped her. Plain and simple. In September 2010, Rakeem Bolton entered a plea bargain deal where he pled guilty to a misdemeanor assault charge and was given a go-and-sin-no-more suspended sentence. She was 16 when he raped her at a party in Silsbee, Texas, in October 2008. She remained seated, folded her arms, and sat silently when Rakeem Bolton went to the foul line to shoot a free throw at a basketball game. The district superintendent, his assistant, and the school principal ganged up on her there and then at that moment and told her to cheer for Bolton or go home! She refused to cheer for her rapist and was dismissed from the cheerleading squad. She and her parents sued school officials and the district. They claimed the nature of their complaint was that the school had punished her for exercising her right of free expression. In an act of sublime judicial sickness, the appeals court ruled against her, the Federal Court of Appeals that sits in New Orleans.
under the theory that a cheerleader, a 16-year-old girl, acts as a mouthpiece for the school. She's not paid. She receives no special privileges, no bump in grades. But that she agreed to be a mouthpiece for the school and cheer for anybody the school wanted her to cheer for. Yay, Hitler! You know. If they say, yay, Hitler, yay, Hitler. That was the logic propounded by the Federal Circuit Court of Appeals in New Orleans. The Federal Circuit Court of Appeals in New Orleans also additionally punished the family for daring to sue that school board by ordering that her parents reimburse the school district more than $45,000, which were the school board's costs of defending against what they claimed was a frivolous suit. That's all in the past. That's what we were talking about when I first brought this story to your attention. The case has gone to the United States Supreme Court. The United States Supreme Court ruled by John Roberts, Sammy Alito, Tony Scalia, Clarence Thomas, and Kennedy with a minority of so-called liberals and centrists in an unsigned memorandum Monday told a rape victim to go the hell home. That she would have, that her free speech rights would have no protection by the Supreme Court of the United States of America. That a little raped girl would have no redress of grievances in the highest court in the land. That is one of those little benchmark sad commentaries on where this country is. It is far more of a commentary on where this country is than the execution of a mass murderer in Pakistan. Go home, and you and your mama and daddy can figure out some way to write a check to the school board that told you to cheer for your rapist. She paid with her physical dignity. She paid with her sanity. And now her family has been ruined by a Supreme Court of Appeals that doesn't give a damn about little raped girls. Let's go to the phones. Oh, I guess I was wrong. There you have it. Can you imagine? Can you take just a couple of moments of your life, however hard it may be, whatever travails you may face, take just a couple of moments of your life and imagine the horrors of a 16-year-old who goes to a party and comes home a rape victim, who even has the courage, as so many raped women do not, because of the trauma, because of the horror, because of the social stigma, who has the courage to name her rapist and follow through. And then, in an act not of vocal militancy, but of quiet protest in the finest tradition of American protest, merely sits still while her rapist shoots a free throw. There was no rape charge. Again, it was pled down to simple assault. There was no jail time. And the rapist was told, don't do it again. The rape victim is now on the hook for $45,000 in legal fees. And let me tell you a little something about legal fees, if you don't already know. Those merciless bastards who defended the school board, who now have a judgment, a perfected judgment against that mother, that father, and that young woman, will hound them to the ends of the earth. Were I that young woman, I would go as far away from the United States as I could possibly get and never let the name of the nation cross my lips again. Because you know what? When the highest court in the United States says that it will not even consider your case, that's a pretty clear statement that you're not welcome here. Hard to tolerate, isn't it? And then this, as we wrap up for the evening. A survey out from Save the Children. The best and worst places on the planet to be a mother. If you want to be a mama, if you want to raise children healthy and happy and see them live past age 5, which is some sort of a benchmark, your best bets are to have your children in Norway, Iceland, Sweden, Denmark, or Finland. If you just can't stand the cold, that's okay, because Australia and New Zealand come next, followed by Belgium, the Netherlands, and France. In those countries, the report from Save the Children says women and children enjoy excellent health, education, and economic conditions. You'll notice that I just rattled off about 10 countries. Little memo for the crowd standing around outside the White House fence hollering, USA, USA, USA. Little memo for them. The USA didn't make it into the top 10. That's all right. We're number 11. No, we're not. 12? Sorry. 13? Don't think so. Unlucky number anyway. 14? Mm-mm. Didn't make it into the top 30 either. Ah!
Ah, come on, man! USA! USA! USA!
Number 31. Number 31. Yeah. 11, 12, and 13, Germany, Spain, and Britain. Number 31, the United States of America. Just edging ahead of Luxembourg and Belarus. U.S. Oh. Average life expectancy for a Norwegian woman is age 83. Maybe there's something to be said about all that freezing cold. The worst place on earth to be a mother. And you, taxpayer, have a hand in this. Is Afghanistan. A woman has a reasonable chance of expecting to live to be 83 years old in Norway. In Afghanistan, a woman, at best, might see 45. I look at my beloved Agnes, and she would be nearing the end of her life were she an Afghan woman. Conditions were documented by Save the Children. Conditions for mothers and children in 164 countries, 43 developed nations, and 121 in the developing world. Gee. Suddenly, What? And I'm proud to be an American, or at least I know I'm free. And my mama, I never knew her, cause she did give her life, giving birth to me, and I proudly... ...43 developed nations, 121 in the developing world. We are 31st out of 43. We ain't in even in the top 50%. By the way, but you know, if you want to assuage those feelings of American inadequacy by saying at least we're not, well, you've got Luxembourg, Belarus, and then the bottom of the index, Central African Republic, Sudan, Mali, Eritrea, Republic of Congo, Chad, Yemen, Guinea-Bissau, and finally, at the bottom of the barrel, Niger. USA! 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 So the next time you hear some Republicans say, we got the best health care system in the world, just tell him to cram it up his ass. A quick email in from Kate before we get out of here. Shot down by the old boys in black dresses. Those who disrespect the rights of women are racking up some really bad karma. That girl has been radicalized to the chagrin of those folks. She is apt to raise some hell for social justice. I can feel it coming on as we speak. Too bad the society is spending so much energy on the killing of a dead person. This story's blown in on the back draft of the jet that didn't crash into the Pentagon. It's all circus and theater. I'm so tired of being considered a chump. Fade on the front range. So it is time to close down and go back and, I don't know, see if the ceiling's still in the bedroom, if it really is time to move out. Thanks to everybody who makes all of this happen. Back tomorrow night, but remember, a live show Thursday, the Great Burrito Eating Contest of Cinco de Mayo 2011. Live on the Horn Youth Stream channel. Should be fun. Thanks to our chat room moderator, Lottie. Thanks to our news ninjas, Gene and Susan. Happy birthday again, Susan. Thanks to our blogger, Texas Betsy. I hope you are feeling better, much better, well, recovering nicely by now. Thanks to our op-ed columnist, Reverbo, Cavalcade of Crazy, HeadOnRadioNetwork.com. Thanks to John Fox and to Ben Birch. Ben Birch is raising funds at WhiteRoseSociety.org. It's what keeps us all a-going on the technical end of the spectrum. Thanks to the hardest-working, bravest people I know, the folks at Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net, and ColeRiverWind.org. And always, 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 Gina, Judy, it's all for you.